Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Syrupcast, Mobile Syrup's Canadian tech-focused podcast. I'm Patrick O'Rourke and Brad Bennett, a man who refers to himself as the bad boy of tech. It's 2022. We're going to keep this joke going forever.
Wow.
He's across the internet from me. How are you doing, Brad?
I'm good. I'm thinking about maybe ways I could shake the nickname. And like next time you see me, I'm going to be helping an old lady across the street. And then we'll have to then try and call me a bad boy.
You're going
to
be the nice boy of tech?
Maybe. Friendly? I don't know. We'll see. 2022, I could be a whole new person this year. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. It's good to be back. We've been off for a little bit.
That's true.
So excited to get back at it and create cool stuff and also get the podcast back up and running again, because I think we haven't had an episode since the end of November, roughly.
Yeah, we're back, guys. Sounds about right. We've been gone since November.
And that was the voice of John Lamont that you just heard. He's on the podcast with us today, as usual. He's often here, but he's back again. What's good, John?
Back again. Just living life. Trying not to freeze because it's so cold outside.
I think it's warmer today,
but yesterday it's a lot warmer today.
I was gonna go for a walk yesterday after work, and I walked outside with like my jacket and all my winter gear on, and I just like turned around and went back inside.
Yeah,
I will say there was some really pretty snow yesterday. Like, you know, when you get those big fluffy flakes that kind of like float. Yeah, that was really neat, but it was too cold.
It's gonna be cold.
So I admired them from the inside of my windows instead of going outside.
If it's gonna be cold, it might as well snow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
If I don't have to drive specifically.
Yes.
Okay. Now you're just
that very narrow snow acceptance.
I don't want to drive in the snow. I hate it. Well, I do have winter tires now, though.
I still haven't put mine on, but don't tell my dad. I'm like 90% sure he's not listening to this, so I'm feeling comfortable talking about it. But yeah, I haven't put mine on yet. Just lazy.
Parents are the winter tire police.
I know. Every time I talk to him, he's like, "You get those winters on? Yeah, I'm working on it.
They'll get on someday."
Yeah.
So this week, we're going to talk about Halo Infinite, which came out at the beginning of December. We had a ton of coverage on the site about the game from both myself and Brad Shankar. And if you follow me on Twitter, that's all I talk about, like, pretty much all the time. It's all I do. Post clips of myself doing not really that good kill streaks in Halo Infinite to Twitter. And then also CES 2022. I was pretty low-key.
Wait, did that happen?
Yeah, it happened. Believe it or not,
it did. I missed it. Oh my goodness.
It did happen, but I wouldn't blame you for missing it. There wasn't a lot, and we'll get into that. But before we get to the core of the show, Brad, please hit us with a very brief rendition of the hottest news of the week.
You mean like the chillest news of the week?
Yeah, the chillest news of the week, yeah.
Okay.
Because it's -15 outside.
Yeah. So the first one's not even really that chill, but in the ongoing saga of like Rogers, I don't know, what is it, the CEO turnover, the oust, the mutiny, I'm not sure how I'd like to exactly.
Canadian succession.
The family drama.
Canadian the family succession. Drama. single cam family drama. But yeah, there's a new like permanent CEO. I believe Tony Safferty, he's the one that's in, but I believe he was the guy that like was the temporary CEO when the whole like sort of spin up happened a few months ago, and now he's permanent. So seems was, like the son is Edward Rogers Jr. or was that his name?
His name's Edward Rogers. Safferty was like his guy. Like that's who he wanted to be the CEO.
And I think that's what kicked off the whole family drama. Tony Staffieri, I think, is that how you say it? It's pronounced, if I Staffieri. Remember correctly. Was kind of the catalyst for the whole thing because Ed Rogers wanted him to replace Joe Natale. And then Joe Natale found out because of a butt dial, and that kind of kicked off the whole family drama which eventually ended with Joe Natale getting ousted and Tony Staffieri becoming the interim and then later the actual new CEO.
Is it Natale or is it Natale?
I thought it was Natale.
I don't know. None of us can pronounce any last names today.
Oh my goodness.
Let's skip off for Rogers. Either way, that's happening. Oh, wait. Brian Cox, star of the actual show Succession. Didn't he do like a celebrity cameo to one of the people involved? Isn't somebody running that like now when we're recording this?
That happened today. Yeah, that did happen last night. It was like a pretty funny Globe and Mail like exclusive labeled story.
How do they even get that?
I'm trying to remember the details of it. I'm trying to find the link. I did post it somewhere. Did I not post it in links?
Okay, I don't know. I don't have a Globe subscription, so I can't even read it.
Succession star Brian Cox congratulates Edward Rogers in paid video message for ousting former CEO Joe Natale.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're writing about it because that's obviously something we would do.
If you get that message, how do you feel? Like, do you feel like you won something? Is that like a congratulatory message from Brian Cox? Or is that like, I'm a TV villain, you're a villain in real life message?
I don't even know if he like, because it's through Cameo, right? That's the paid service they're talking about. Like, did someone pay to have that created and then just sent it to Edward Rogers? I haven't read the story yet. We probably shouldn't be talking about it because I don't know the details. But the headline itself is funny. Like, I clicked on it last night. I don't have a Globe subscription. I read the little brief and I was like, that's funny. That was my reaction to it.
That's comedy. Yeah.
Just beautiful.
But like, I mean, it was like a pretty crazy time when all this Rogers stuff was happening, but it seems to have leveled out at this point, especially if there's like a permanent CEO in place.
Yeah, we'll have to see. How does that sound? Does that sound a little better or too quiet?
That is perfect.
It all is right, excellent. I'm gonna touch it. Then moving on, I guess, to the next chill news. The Galaxy S21 FE is now available at Canadian retailers, but for pretty much $1,000, which is a lot for that phone. I don't know. It's like flagship price or what flagship price was 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago.
Yeah, John, you broke it down based on the cost of carriers, right?
I did. So outright from Samsung, the S21 FE is $949, we'll just say, for ease of math. And then at most of the carriers, it's over $1,100. Most of them have it at like $1,170 or $1,178. And then a couple had it a little bit lower, a little bit higher. It kind of just depends. Interestingly, most of the carriers had it set up in such a way where if you did the device financing over the 2 years, you pay the $950. So it's the same as just buying it outright from Samsung, which is, I guess, okay. It would have been nice to see some sort of discount or deal. But in most of the cases, the only way to get any sort of discount on the phone was to do the bring it back program where you pay less money if you return the phone at the end of your 2 year term. Or you pay the difference to keep it.
Does the bring it back program actually make more sense for these like mid-tier, almost like budget level phones? Because the assumption is after 2 years, they'll probably be in like way worse shape than a flagship anyway.
Yeah. I would argue that probably in most cases, if you want to upgrade your phone on a regular basis, these bring it back programs actually make sense because you're not going to want to keep your phone after 2 years. So if you're going to regularly upgrade your phone every 2 years and you're pretty good at not breaking it, there's not really any reason to not use the bring it back because you basically pay less for the phone. You don't get to keep it, but you use it for 2 years and then you get a new phone.
It's a pretty good phone too, right? Like I guess Dean's going to review it. I think the only thing, I'm sure someone will correct me, and I really should have looked this up ahead of time, but I think one of the only big things that it's missing is it doesn't have a variable refresh rate, I don't think. Like, it doesn't ratchet down. I think you can only set it to, like, 60 or 120.
It's 120, but stuck, yeah. And the cameras are a little lower, and I mean, technically it's like a 1080p screen and, like, more plasticky, but, yeah, it's still, like, good specs and a decent battery, big enough phone, probably good enough cameras. Like, I can't imagine it's a terrible phone by any means. It's just the price is a lot for what we were expecting from a like fan edition, I think.
It sounds very comparable to the Pixel 6, not the 6 Pro, the lower the Pixel 6, which, correct me if I'm wrong, but is what, like $800 in Canada? $700?
I think in the Pixel 6?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember. It's been a long time since I've looked at the Pixel 6 price.
I'll Google it as you're talking.
I'm trying to find Pixel 6 cost the Canada. S20 FE was in mobile service.
$799.
Yeah. So it's like $150 difference. And I would say, given what the specs are of the S21 FE, you might be better off getting the Pixel 6, which is going to be similar spec-wise for less money. Plus, you know, the benefits of being on Google Android point. Versus Samsung Android.
What oh, yeah, other, the S20 FE was $950 as well, so it's exactly the same price.
Yeah.
Weird.
And it surprisingly did not see a lot of price drops. I remember covering a couple of the deals for it during Black Friday Boxing Day season for the S20 FE, and it was, like, barely discounted.
I think what's going to hurt the FE, the S21 FE the most is, like, the S22 is likely just around the corner. Like, it's going to be revealed in February or March, almost for certain. It may not come out until a little later, but it's going to get shown off, and that kind of takes the luster off the S21 FE a little bit. Like, I know it's targeted at a different audience. It's kind of people that, like, are more willing to wait to upgrade their phones, but still, it's something to keep in mind.
Yeah.
What other news do you have for us, Bennett?
I just got a message from Josh, but the, two last ones are kind of my own little things. So I wrote about this yesterday. The OnePlus Buds Pros, which I have here somewhere, right here. These ones actually got an update, which allows them to work with like two devices at once, similar to how AirPods work. And it works really well, like way better than I thought. So basically you just can connect to two devices at once. And I did, like, tested it on a bunch of different devices and with a bunch of different services like YouTube and Spotify and Apple Music. And if you're playing things on both of them, we'll just stay connected to the home set. But if you pause, you know, the first thing you connected to and the other one's playing, we'll just navigate over. And if you pause that one, hit play back in the other one, it'll navigate back. And then basically whichever one is playing or was playing first, it will switch between really seamlessly. So, like, I think this is good enough for most people. Like, AirPods will connect to more devices.
It's the best thing about AirPods.
But I find for most people, you know, you don't have, like, you're not connecting to your Apple Watch every day. Maybe you don't have an iPad. I think for most people, they have like two devices. For me, I feel like it's my computer and my phone. So now that the OnePlus Buds can just go seamlessly between those two devices, I even updated my review. I'm thinking these are way more practical now. Like, I like these a lot more.
Do they just do it over Bluetooth? Like, is that the automatic switching?
That's cool. Yeah, I believe so. Cause it works with my MacBook. It works on an iPhone. Like,
I've always contended that that's like, I know the AirPods are more expensive than other AirPods, and I know that there's like similar Android technology that's sort of played catch up. But that just like the seamless ability to either connect to Apple devices or switch between Apple devices. I still think, and I don't use a lot of other wireless earbuds anymore. I used to. I don't really do that. Maybe we'll talk about that on a podcast at some point. But
yeah.
That's like the big selling feature for me for the AirPods is how easy it is to switch between devices.
Yeah, same. Me too. Like, just the fact that I can go from my like Mac to my phone as I'm like going around my life is my favorite. So the OnePlus doing that and doing it in a like non-platform agnostic way, like you don't need to be on, you know, it doesn't switch between two OnePlus phones. It's like whatever, just two Bluetooth devices, Windows, that's computer, cool. Mac. Actually, I didn't test the seamless switching with Windows, and I know Bluetooth headphones on Windows is always kind of a little bit of a pain. So maybe I should try that again later next and update that story. Anyway, moving on to the smallest one is, I don't know if anyone's seen it, but I reviewed this smart water bottle. I'm going to update this story recently, but I'm still using the water bottle weeks later. I haven't charged it in like a week and a half, but it's just a good bottle. This lid, it's got like a little locking mechanic on it. And it's just like a really nice like button and a good like opening size to just like glug water down, and just happy with the overall construction of that bottle, but not using it for its smarts anymore because it was a hassle, and taking time out of your day to charge a water bottle seems insane. And that's it with the news.
I still think that I should get one of those. I remember I think I told you that I was hoping someone would get me one for Christmas. That didn't happen.
Yeah.
I may buy one because that's like, I think all the, like in pretty much 80% of cases, whenever I feel sick or like I wake up and I don't feel great, it's because I'm dehydrated. I didn't drink enough water. I just forget to all the time. And it sounds silly, but I think that like a water bottle with a light on it that is like, hey, idiot, you should drink water so that you don't feel like shit at 6 o'clock might be helpful. I'm probably wrong. And like, I would do the same thing as you and just forget about it. But in theory, it sounds like something that might solve that issue at least a little bit.
I'm sure there are smartphone apps that can like replicate a similar functionality.
This app, the app you can get for this, just it still sends me notifications every hour. Like it's like, hey, idiot, drink, or like it's always like a pun. It's like stay hydrated.
Need my Apple Watch.
That notifications come on the watch.
It does it. Okay.
I'm
surprised
Hydrate.
The Apple Watch, given its kind of health kick, does not have some sort of water drinking reminder.
Honestly,
it's going to be the only new Series
Watch
8
9. Yeah. yeah. But just back to your water thing, Pat. Honestly, just back when I first started trying to like drink more water, which I don't know, was like a while ago. But I still think the thing that helped me the most was like just a Nalgene bottle, because like you can see how much water is in it, like with the measurements on the side. So it's just like, okay, like you can just like in your head very quickly know like, oh, I drank that much. And just like always having it around like on your desk, like it's there. So you can drink it. I don't know. I just found like that was like $15 and help me drink water just as much as this like $100 bottle. So
I just realized over the break, like days where I do not feel like shit are days where I've actually consumed liquid that is not like tea or coffee or like some kind of,
I know,
like, I don't drink a lot of like pop, but some kind of pop. Like I just straight up drank water and had a coffee and I'm like, hell yeah, I feel great. It's 8 PM. Let's play some Halo.
Yeah, and then you're regretting not having the coffee because you need those jitters for the game.
Oh, yeah. I will second that. My Rockstar habit.
Having a water bottle on your desk and near you all the time is probably the easiest way.
That's true.
Yeah. That's what I've been doing for years, and it's worked for me. I just have a water bottle, and then I will drink from it.
Yeah, that's part of why I like this one. It's good for the desk. Good lid, and it's got like a little bit of rubber on the bottom, so it doesn't slide around too much. It's nice. But I'm sure there are lots of smart water bottle companies, Pat, that I'm sure nobody gives coverage to. So if you found one, I'm sure you could find a way to give like write about them. And maybe you'd be an interesting foil to my article, you know, like an interesting opposition, because I think it's a pretty like subjective.
Maybe I'll do that today. I'll spend some time towards the end of the day researching some smart water bottle companies.
I'll totally show up at your house. I'll totally show up at your house really early in the morning to pour it on your head and take the picture too. So
that'd be great. Oh man, that's such a good picture. So many people message me about that. They're like, what's wrong with this guy? Why did he do this? This is amazing at the same time.
I don't know. I couldn't think of like a more fun way to do it.
Okay, let's get into CES.
Woo.
I think, like, I expected CES to be really low-key this year. I knew there was still going to be a physical show. My expectation as the pandemic ramped up yet again was that most sensible media organizations would pull out. There wouldn't be a lot of, like, tech coverage there. The Verge, the Engadget, TechCrunch, all those sites would pull out. We kind of saw that happen. The only, like, media that seemed to be there were influencers that, to my understanding, or at least based on the sponsored posts I saw, were paid to be there to talk about a specific company. Like I saw a bunch of Canadian YouTubers that were there specifically to like promote Razer products, or I can't think of another example offhand, but it was all over the place. That seemed on the media side to be the only people that attended. And when you saw photos of the show floor, it was like entirely empty. It was like a ghost town. With that in mind, last year, I think we saw cool announcements. Stuff came out of the show. It was obviously, we covered it remote again. There's nobody here. Nobody like actually at the show again. We were in the middle of the pandemic. But this year, it really, really seemed like nothing, like absolutely nothing came out of CES. Like I know we saw the S21 FE reveal. We already talked about that phone. That wasn't really part of CES. It was revealed within the CES window, which we're starting to see more and more of. Samsung back in the day would hold like a launch event alongside CES for like some of its less prominent smartphones, just to kind of like jump on that CES hype cycle in a way, but still have their own event.
That, for me, that kind of happened this year.
Yeah.
The S21 FE.
It did. I guess what I mean is physical events, like an actual physical event somewhere like around Las Vegas that isn't part of CES, but they're doing like a little thing. And they, I don't know if they've done that specifically for CES, but they did that for Mobile World Congress. I guess that's what I'm thinking of. Like back in the day when they launched the S7, it wasn't like at Mobile World Congress. It was in the city of Barcelona, and you had to take like a 45 minute taxi to get there. But they like jumped on, I guess, the trend of the event itself. Anyways, all I was going to say is like the two big things that I saw come out of the event are like, one, more electric vehicle concept cars. We've seen that a lot over the last couple of years, but there was a ton of cool, interesting ones this year. And monitors. There seemed to be a lot of hype behind monitors. And the one that caught my eye in particular was Samsung's 55-inch Odyssey Arc. It's like this really massive monitor. It's
curved. You're not scared of 55 inches in front of you? I'm daunted.
My current office setup, I would be. I couldn't use that. It wouldn't work.
Block the entire window. But if I had,
it would 100%. I'm like looking at it now. I wouldn't be able to see it my window anymore. But if I had a different office setup, which for a monitor this good, I would probably be willing to rework my life in that respect. It just looked really cool. Like has the ability to twist on its side. There's like different viewing modes for different kind of aspect ratios, and the big thing for me was the simple fact that like it's thin. Those other curved monitors that Samsung sells, a lot of them are really thick. Like they're not that much money. Okay, never mind. They're very expensive.
They're all a lot.
They're very expensive, they're not quite as expensive as I expected. And no one knows how much this one's going to cost. I don't even think the specs or resolution or ports or anything like that have been revealed. It's just like media being hyped about the concept of like a large curved monitor that's very thin, which is ridiculous in a sense, but it's also like when you see the pictures, it's
very
just
cool looking, but and that's
it's really really cool looking. And I want to know more about it, and there's some other companies that came out with monitors, but those were my two big takeaways from CES is EV concept cars and cool monitors.
Yeah, before we move away from the concept car conversation, I guess we should talk about that. I mean, the BMW color changing one was sick. I got a lot of press from everybody, but that's so a really cool. It's like, it's dumb, and you know there's like almost like no way they could like logically pull it off. No. I mean, this is like with a lot of these concepts too. The other BMW like back screen one was like, it's like, where are they gonna hide that TV? And like, can it even be used while it's in motion?
Explain what that is. I know you wrote a long post about it, but just expand on it a little bit.
The color changing tech or the TV one? I sort of jumped on too many things.
The TV one.
It's just like they had this concept for like the back seat of BMWs. They called it like their cinema display, and it like was a screen that was, in theory, I think the concept didn't come down. It was just like locked down, but it would like come down sort of right behind the front seat headrests.
Yeah.
And it sort of like blocked the entire rear window from the people in the front. But I think the idea would be that people in the front are now in the back watching movies while they like charge their electric car or something. And it's just like, they're like, it was like a huge 55-inch like TV in a car with like surround sound and like 4D. Like they had speakers in the seats so you could like feel the vibration. And it's just like, okay, cool. But like, I think I'm just going to like sit somewhere for 45 minutes to charge. I can probably kill time on my phone. Like I don't need to sit in like a cinema and like, is this cool? Like, can this be driven? Can this be used while you're driving? Like, can this be useful if you have like kids in the backseat? Like, cause that's obviously way better than like, I'm sure you guys remember the old DVD players in the roofs of vans that were like, I don't know what, how big were those screens? Like 9 inches. So
if,
but you could see without the rear view mirror with it. So who knows, but yeah, that one was kind of wacky. And like even the concept car they had there was like built into like a wall kind of a way. So you could tell they just like hadn't made the tech small enough to like fit into the roof of a car.
I think that's one of the things that's like a bit of a common misconception about CES. Like it's called the Consumer Electronics Show, but a lot of the stuff that we see is just like straight up smoke and mirrors. Like it's cool. Yeah. And I love to write about it because it's the most futuristic, wacky stuff, but it's not products that are actually going to get into the hands of consumers. Like that color changing car where I believe it's e-ink, right? It's like an e-ink.
It's like an e-ink wrap paint, on the car. Yeah.
Thing. Like that is crazy. Like it looks like something out of like iRobot or like some crazy futuristic movie or something like that. Yeah. And it works. Like when you see videos of it, it seems to really like truly actually work, which when I first saw people tweeting about it, I didn't believe. But that's like it's not going to be something that you can like go to a BMW dealer, get a new car and be like, hey, give me that futuristic e-ink wrap dog. Like that's not going to, I don't think that's ever something that's ever going to happen.
No, the cost of it for like what it is crazy. Yeah. And like the, even the way they were showing it off, they're like, it could help you find your car in a parking spot. So you're like, my car's just going to be flashing black and white, like really slowly. Cause the e-ink doesn't refresh quick. It's not like pop, pop, pop. It's like,
yeah,
ooh, white
pulses,
black, white. Yeah. And then it's just like, I could just honk the horn, you know, like, it's, yeah.
It doesn't seem super practical, although I did see some people talking about one potentially practical application of it being
evading heating the
and cooling. You could turn the car black to absorb more sunlight, which would help warm it up faster. Or if it's really hot out, make it white to reflect more sunlight to keep it from heating up faster. But like that's like a really small thing compared to like the expense of it. So it just seems really silly.
It made me think of Grand Theft Auto. Like when you would, and it's in every single Grand Theft Auto, I think at this point, the video game, like you drive into
the paint spray shop. Paint,
a body shop, and they like spray paint your car a different color and then you leave and the police don't know like who you are anymore. Which is like the most video game thing of all time. But like that was the first thing I thought of was like, oh, people are going to use this or stealing stuff, but it's never going to be available to anybody, so that's not like an actual real concern, but that was my like gut initial reaction.
Yeah, let's not say never, you know, like in 5-10 years perhaps they've figured out a way that like coming. The top end BMWs that cost a few million are like cutting the color changing job, but you're definitely not seeing this, but that's like that's CES for you, you know. You just see
there cool was other stuff. Wacky stuff too, like John, I think you covered a lot of this for us. Was it Razer had that
I hate this
desk thing
with
buttons on it, but not buttons but touch screens, and do you want to explain that a little bit?
So Razer showed off a few things at CES. First off was a concept modular gaming desk called Project Sophia. And it's basically just a desk with a big, like, I think it was 55-inch screen attached to it. And the desk is also your computer. So it's got all your computer parts, your CPU, your GPU.
Oh, the computer's in it.
In it.
Yeah.
And then it has a bunch of user-replaceable modules to expand on that functionality. So you can add, like, a little screen that will show your GPU and your CPU temps and monitor your computer usage.
And by little screens, he means, like, in the desk. Like, it's a glass desk. Yeah. So you see these, like, through the surface of the desk.
Yeah. There's, you know, like, a little touch screen with app shortcuts on it. So you can quickly just, like, tap a button or tap a screen on your desk and open up apps on your computer. There's a whole bunch of different stuff. Qi wireless chargers. One module was like a drawing pad, like a Wacom drawing pad with a pen. I don't think it was actually like a Wacom branded one, but it was that kind of idea.
They erased the label.
And perhaps the coolest thing was the mug heater option. So if you want to keep your coffee warm, you can put a module in and then put your mug on that. It'll warm up your coffee. So the whole thing is like frankly ridiculous, and it'll probably never ever actually be available for people to buy because, I mean, look at all the modular stuff that people have tried before. Like Google tried its Project Aria phone, and it just, none of that stuff ever works because you would need to get manufacturers on board with building the modules that would work with the desk, or Razer would have to build all the modules. And if they did that, then the price would just be obscene.
Well, I don't
see it ever happening.
So many Razer CES products like never actually get released. Like I can't remember what it was called, but remember that laptop that was like stolen from the show floor at some point had like
three
screens on it, and they like folded out and everybody wrote about it and talked about how cool it was, which I used to be like really, really down on and negative about, like the amount of coverage that these products that are never going to come out get. But I think that's totally fine now. Like it's cool stuff that people are interested in. It's proof of concept. It's futuristic. It's fascinating. It's like the kind of like core tech blogging posts that I grew up like loving to read. I just think that you got to be like really, really honest with readers about the fact that like this is not coming out. Like this is cool. It's really neat. Maybe we'll see an inkling of this in a future device, but it's don't like think you're going to be able to pre-order this in February. It will never see the light of day. This is literally just for and like a lot of these posts come back to Razer. Like, this is literally just for Razer to get some media attention.
It literally comes back to Razer every time. They started so like almost by accident, like stumbling onto these, like creating the most like hype object at CES. Like, it was like a modular PC a few years ago, or that like three screen laptop thing. And it's like these ideas that were just like almost doable, you know, it's like, oh, they could maybe they might pull it off. And now it's just like, never happens. They're never building this desk that like, they pulled out of like a Star Trek prop department. Like, looks like, yeah, it's nuts. There's no way.
Yeah.
What were you going to say, John?
I was just going to say that, like, I think, you know, for us, there's like a really fine line of, you know, covering this stuff because it's interesting and fun, but also like making it clear that, hey, you're probably not going to be able to buy this. And I think with, you know, the Razer Sophia desk, it's a neat concept, but to me the more interesting thing about it is kind of it promotes the idea of doing a PC inside of a desk, which is something that's kind of existed in, you know, custom PC building circles for a while. I think, you know, Linus Tech Tips has done videos on building
seen custom it on Reddit too
desks and stuff like that. So, you know, to me this is more of a, like, I see Project Sophia and I'm like, oh, that looks really cool. I would love to build a PC inside of a desk that kind of mimics this.
Good point.
Not, you know, I don't see it and go, oh, I want to go buy Project Sophia because it's probably insanely expensive if it would ever be on sale. Yep. That said, I will give Razer a little bit of credit because I think last year they showed off that Zephyr mask as a CES concept, and then that actually became available later on. Because
and I barely, though. I probably barely said on this available. Podcast it was never gonna be released. I probably said whoever did you write it the first post? I don't remember. Time is a flat circle.
Yep.
I probably said like, hey John, you gotta make sure that you mention at the end of the story that it's never gonna come out or something like that. I'm sure I did that. And I was wrong.
Yeah. They did release it. Stock was super limited, naturally. Yeah. And it sold out basically immediately. And I wrote the other day there was a whole bunch of
isn't there like a Gen 2? Because, yeah.
This year they released a Gen 2 version that's basically identical, except it has a microphone to amplify your voice. Like and then Darth there was a Vader's bunch of people helmet? Were, yeah. Imagine.
Hilarious. Just, I'd like to buy this bag of Doritos.
There was a bunch of outcry recently because on Razer's website for the Zephyr mask, they talked about having N95 grade air filters. And a bunch of people were like, you can't just say that. And then Razer scrubbed all the claims from their website because they're still waiting on like certification from the FDA.
That was one of your morning posts, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the mask is one that definitely bucks the trend for like Razer overpromising and underdelivering because they overpromised and just barely delivered on that one. But also, that was like a mask that they could probably manufacture for like less than $100 and sell for more than $100. It's like this, you know, this PC thing is like we're talking thousands, if not tens of thousands.
Was there anything else that caught? I get this is to both of you. Like, was there anything else that caught your eye specifically at CES as like a notable product that you think listeners would be interested in?
Yeah, I've got a couple things. I don't know, Bennett, if you have any.
You can go first.
Yeah, I'll just run through them quickly. There was actually a lot of interesting laptop/PC stuff at this year's CES. Intel revealed its 12th gen mobile chips, which are pretty neat. It was just like an announcement that they exist, which is, you know, where most things start. And you know, naturally, Intel has all this hype about how they're super fast and all this stuff. So it'll be interesting to see how they actually perform in real world testing as laptops with these chips come out over the next year.
Yeah.
Will they destroy the M1?
Laptop is going to be from Asus, and it showed off a 17-inch foldable PC. Kind of like, I don't know if you remember this, but last year I reviewed Lenovo's ThinkPad X1 foldable. So it's kind of looks like that, but like bigger. So I'm pretty excited to check that out. Yeah.
Wait, 17-inch as in like that's the screen when it's unfolded. So when it's folded, it's like how big would the screen be then?
Yeah, so it's 17-inch unfolded. So when it's folded, it would be smaller. But like 17-inch is really large for a tablet.
That's a big boy.
That's a big boy. So I'm interested to see how it kind of works in practice. because one of my issues with the Lenovo one was that it was really small, especially when it was in like the folded mode and you were using one screen. It was kind of difficult to use and was super impractical. So maybe the 17-inch one will be a little bit more practical. Who knows? We'll see.
Yeah, I'm intrigued. The size like bucks the trend that you would normally, like 17 inches for a laptop, huge, but it's like, oh, but it folds.
Yeah.
Who knows? I'm very intrigued. Okay, you sold me.
Yeah. That's definitely one thing that I'm looking forward to trying out this year. And then the other thing is Dell showed off its new XPS 13 laptop.
Oh, yeah. Which touch bar.
Has a touch bar, even though that's not, they don't want to call it that. Dell is adamant that it's just a capacitive touch function. It's different, though, isn't it? It is different.
It doesn't. Totally it fair. Doesn't change too with like different apps or anything, right? Like it's just buttons that are like kind of locked in place.
Yeah,
which it's makes like, more sense.
If you remember, you know, the early days of Android smartphones, where every Android phone had like little light up buttons on the bottom that were like touch.
Yeah,
they weren't actual buttons. It's like that, but it's your entire function row on your computer.
Okay.
So I don't know. It might be fine. It might be annoying. Who knows? We'll have to see when we touch it. I think the more interesting thing about the XPS 13 is it doesn't have a clear touchpad.
Oh, yeah.
Like trackpad.
Wait,
it just,
what?
It looks like it extends across the entire bottom of the screen. And
the bottom of the, like below the keyboard.
In the chat here.
How would that work with like false touches?
You just wouldn't know where the boundaries are. Yeah. You just wouldn't know where the boundaries are for it, I'm assuming. Yeah. Like,
so that's, that's the weird thing. If the entire width of it was the trackpad,
I remember this now.
It would be, I think, really neat. But that's not what they've done. They've just made it so you can't see the boundary of the touchpad. And from what I've read from other people who got hands-on with the XPS 13, the boundary extends from basically one alt key to the other. So it's a pretty wide touchpad, but it doesn't extend the whole way across. It looks really neat and futuristic. I don't know how practical it's going to be in real world use, especially if the whole area is not touch sensitive. That seems like a misstep to me, but
we'll see. I just think it looks cool. If it was all touch sensitive, you might mess it up when you like were typing with it on your lap and your wrists were hitting that zone, maybe. That might be person dependent. Cause I'm kind of, like when I first saw it, was with you, I was like, the whole way that'd be sick. Like, the drag and drop, like I run three monitors right now because I'm using a laptop in my two, and so like the drag and drop from one to the other is always like a, and then put the other finger down and go over again, or use the mouse. Yep. But like on a super wide trackpad, that could be smooth. That's what you need for a 55-inch display. But in practice, it might be difficult because I could imagine it being quite annoying if your palms are tapping it all the time.
Yeah, most laptops these days have pretty decent touch rejection when you're typing. But I could definitely see that being a problem if the whole thing was touch sensitive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, either way, those are two cool laptops. And I'm like interested that Windows laptop makers trying something a little different, because as much as the new Macs got like redesigned, they sort of just like went back to the old design. So to see something futuristic coming from the Windows side is at least keeping the excitement in like the laptop space a little bit.
Yeah. I think that's one of the benefits of the Windows kind of approach to laptops, in that with so many different manufacturers, you can have ones manufacturers doing all kinds of weird stuff. And then you can have manufacturers making traditional tried and true clamshell laptops that are the same as they've been for the last 10 years. And you kind of have that choice where if you want to try out the cool futuristic new thing, you can. And if you want to stick with what you know works, you can.
Yeah. 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 I guess that's like the most unfortunate. It's like good and bad, because at that point, though, it's like people, just through human nature, I think we see this a lot as like reviewers, is people just generally stick with what works. This is getting a little bit off topic, but one of the girls from Vox, Chloe Abrams, she just quit and started like her own YouTube channel yesterday, I think. And it's about like tech and sort of the economy surrounding tech. But one of the quotes she had, it was just like, she was at a whole bunch of like old newspaper clippings of people like saying like early adopter tech was never going to happen, but it had happened, you know, like flight, personal computers, like all that stuff. So yeah, it gets very, like, very interesting.
What did you Did you see anything specific at CES that you wanted to mention, Bennett, or have we already gone over most of it?
Nah, just two like quick things. There was like the Sony OLED technology that was looking kind of cool, although I won't even go that much into it because I didn't write about it, so I don't know that much about it. And also it just is like more high-end OLED tech, which is not what I've been asking for years. I've been like, can we just bring OLEDs down in price, please, to like get them into the mass market? But I think this new tech was to help with like burn-in and stuff like that. So perhaps we're still years away.
Oh, I remember reading about this now. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm kind of excited for that, just on like my, you know, TV spec nerd stuff. There's always lots of TV stuff at CES, but you know, 95-inch like Samsung's finally coming to market, like, didn't really excite me because I'm not going to fit a 95-inch Samsung into my budget or house. And then the other thing is just the Chevy Silverado truck, the electric Chevy Silverado truck got announced. But like most of the electric trucks, it's like it's been announced and we've kind of got like a 2-year, 3-year runway where we might get a few next year of like the really high price, high end ones. And then the year after that, we might get more of the regular ones. But it's got a slightly longer range than the Ford Lightning, but a slightly more expensive price. So the truck battles have begun.
Pre-orders sold out in something like 12 minutes too, I believe.
Yeah, but that's like one of those things that like, you know, what is that? How many were like they've announced the truck 3 years like sort of ahead of its full release with only like one trim.
How many pre-orders are actually available
for this price? They don't even like have a manufacturing like set up for it. So like how many pre-orders did they really offer, you know? Plus they'd already seen like Tesla, Ford, like all those people getting like all those pre-orders selling out. So I think they're just gaming the news cycle in the same way that like every cell phone sells out on the day it's released, you know, stuff like
that. I have a friend that pre-ordered it at a dealer. Like he missed the like CES. I know it wasn't, maybe it was actually tied directly to CES, but he missed the like pre-order window. And then he pre-ordered it, I think in, it's like something ridiculous, like Calgary or something like that at a dealer. He pre-ordered the Silverado at a dealer in Calgary. And he's like looking into like how he can resell it. And I don't know. He's one of those guys that's always like scheming to find different ways to make money. But I was surprised that he was even able to find one at like, Calgary is a big Canadian city, not big in comparison to Toronto or Montreal or whatever, but it's big. It's big. So I was surprised that he was even able to pre-order it there, like after the initial window during CES.
It's also like a 2-day drive from where your friend lives, I'm assuming.
He probably didn't even think about that. Yeah. Right? Like, he's not the type of guy to think ahead. He probably just like looked at the Chevy website and was like, oh, it's available here, pre-order.
I can flip that. But yeah, electric trucks, I don't know. They're pretty cool. They're getting like so much. This is like the craziest part about EVs to me is like they come out, they get so much hype. We write about them. People read them like a lot. Like hype is there. The need is there. Every time we announce a new one, somebody's like, oh, I'm pre-ordering this. Like it seems like, but then it's always like these 2 or 3 years run-ups to when they actually get released. And it's just like annoying, you know, like imagine if like Apple announced the iPhone and then you didn't actually get to like
review it
until
2 years,
you know, it's like, what the F is that?
I was like,
brutal. I hate it. It's really annoying. As a tech reporter, it's like frustrating.
I was somewhat close before we move on to Halo Infinite stuff. I'll just say this really quickly. I was somewhat close to strongly, like seriously considering buying an Ioniq 5 recently because I was, my partner and I were driving somewhere on the weekend. I can't remember where. It was in my neighborhood though, very, very close by. And I saw an Ioniq 5 on the road. And for people that don't know, this is like Hyundai's new big fancy like Model 3 killer electric vehicle. I really like it. It's got like this unique design. It's got a relatively good response to it from like electric car fans and critics. And Bennett used it recently. You liked it a fair amount.
Yeah, we have a video up about it and I've got a written story up about it. But I will say I found this YouTube channel called Throttle House recently, also Canadian. And they did a video about it and their video is stellar, like absolutely.
Okay, I'll have to check that
fantastic
out.
Huge, like Top Gear level shots, so good, so cinematic.
Anyways, I saw it on the road, so I was like, hey, let's just drive past the Hyundai dealer to see if they have any, because my understanding based on my communications with Hyundai is that like the pre-ordered vehicles are right now, like as we speak this month, getting into the hands of Canadians. I think it's only 2,000. Yeah. And then there'll be more coming out as well. So I just like went to the dealer, didn't really talk to anyone, had like a very brief conversation with a guy about like what the shipment looks like and stuff like that. But they had a couple on the lot, which I was very surprised about.
Did you get to go in one? Did you check it out?
No, I didn't. I didn't test drive one or anything because I'm pretty COVID cautious, I guess I would say.
Yeah, but even did you like open a door, you know, touch it, get that new car smell.
I did open a door and I did look inside one. That is something I did. But I do plan to take one for a test drive. It's
flat,
point, but,
eh? Well, we're gonna get one to review that I think you're going to at this point probably will do majority.
I'm hoping if I have the time, and if we do get one, yeah, that's something that I want to do. But I was very close to being like, hey, this is the extended range model. It's not the color I want, but maybe I should just buy this.
Oh, what color was it?
It was black. Black was black. I want the gray one. Cyber gray with either the gray or the black interior.
Yeah, the gray or the white ones I think look the best. All those like gray accents on them, just like a lot of modern cars, they're very plasticky. They're very cool. And like the detail in those accents is actually like when you look at them very closely, like there's this one part along the wheel where it's like this sort of ridge part. But when you look at it from a certain angle, those ridges line up with sort of the body lines of the car. It's well thought out and like little details. But on those detail parts are gray, like a very light gray. So I found when the car was in darker colors like black, or I test drove like a sort of deep blue greeny one, those accent colors looked a little less tacky and a little less sporty than they do on where they blend more into like the gray paint or the white paint.
Yeah, that was the last thing I was gonna say is just I really like the design because it's kind of like video game
so cool
in a way, and it's also like a throwback to the era of like in the 90s with boxy cars and sort of more affordable vehicles. There's like the specific car called the Pony that it's like in some ways based on. But what I was going to say is my partner has never been like totally on board with the idea of getting one because she thinks that it's like a pretty ugly car, which in a way I kind of totally get. But seeing it in person, she was a little more sold on it. Like I think the photos and the press renders and stuff like that make the design look a little more dramatic than it actually looks in person. It's a cool car, like very cool looking car, don't get me wrong, but it doesn't, I don't know. I don't know how to explain it. It doesn't like quite look that ridiculous when it's like actually in front of you. It just looks like a normal car with a few unique flourishes to it.
With the headlights off, it's almost like, you know, it's not like a Kia Soul or something where you like see that really boxy shape from a distance. Yeah. You're like, oh, that's a Kia Soul. Like with the headlights turned off, if you were, you know, a couple, you know, meters away, and it was just parked in a line of cars, it would be hard to pick out the crowd. I think it's nice, it's subtle. You know, and it's a weird EV market. Just where we get in, you know, it's like, what would you get? It's like that, the Mustang Mach-E, maybe the Volkswagen one, but the Volkswagen one is like so boring looking. And the Mach-E, I personally like, maybe that's the way I'd go, but I know a lot of people hate it because it looks like a Mustang. So tough crossover EV market right now. And the Hyundai has the best range and charging.
I could see myself getting an Ioniq within like the next year or year and a half or something like that. Like my car is relatively old at this point. When I talk to the dealer on the phone, it's like a 5-month order period. And that's like a short estimate, right? Like it's probably going to be longer than that. So I'm in no rush. Maybe. My car's fine. It's getting old, but there's nothing wrong with it. It's still good. But I think that's going to be my next vehicle. We're not going to do like a massive section on this, but let's talk a little bit about Halo Infinite before we close out the pod. And let's also do a quick ad break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So I double killed it up. So I beat the campaign long before the game came out because I had early access to it. I really liked Halo Infinite's campaign. I don't think it's perfect. It does feel incomplete in some sense. The ending of it isn't really, I won't get into it, but it's like very open-ended. It's not super satisfying. But for me, I think one of the lines that I keep saying on Twitter and in my review and stuff like that is this is the best case scenario for what a Halo game looks like in 2022. Came out in 2021.
That's fair.
At the very end, it's it, the beginning of the game is very streamlined. These levels kind of, it's like very structured levels, great pacing, the kind of thing that the Halo franchise is known for. Then it drops you into an open world.
That open world part gets less well paced though. I found where I sort of fell apart. I was just like, oh, now they want me to like go discover like hidden armor bases. Is this Far Cry? I'm out.
Yeah, the open world portions, I think there's a lot of longtime Halo fans that weren't a big fan of it, which I totally get. The way that I played it was I didn't do a lot of the side mission stuff. I did a bit of it. Yeah. Most of the like bigger things, like taking the ones that were like directly in your path to the next mission, which I think helped the pacing a little bit. But I think if Definitely. You like you get dropped into that world and you only focus on like the open world missions, whether it's like getting Spartan cores or like taking out enemy bases or what are they called, forward operating bases, freeing Marines from or helping Marines in the forward operating bases, I think things can like drag on a little bit. But if you just barrel forward and you keep doing the missions, the pacing is a little bit better. And then towards the end of the game, it drops you back into like more, I guess I would say like traditional Halo levels, similar to the beginning of the game, where it's very streamlined. You're being pushed down a specific path. That pacing the game is known for, where it's like intense firefight, moment of quiet, cutscene, intense firefight, moment of quiet, cutscene, that rinse and repeat cycle. That returns. It's not my favorite Halo campaign, but I like it way more than Halo 5. I liked it way more than Reach, which most people would disagree with me about. Reach wasn't my thing.
Reach is beautiful, but you're a monster.
But I would say it's probably next to like Halo 1 and 2. It's my favorite campaign. I want to talk about multiplayer, but have you guys dabbled in the campaign a bit? Bennett, I know you have a bit.
I have not. I have it installed and I keep meaning to play it, but I'm a pretty big Destiny 2 player, so usually when I have time to play games, I'm going to play Destiny 2.
It's just Space Halo anyways, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Space.
Well, Halo is also in space, so.
Sorry, it's super Space Halo. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't
Destiny know 2 is Halo, but with space magic instead of grappling
Space hooks. Magic, sure. That's a better way of saying it.
I like to think there's a little magic in the Manol Jar armor, you know, the Master Chief's blood. There's something there. But yeah, I don't know. I played maybe like 2 weeks of multiplayer when it first came out. Really enjoyed the multiplayer, but none of my like, well, Pat, you were into it, but none of my like core like gaming friend group was super into it. So I guess I maybe would have stuck on for like another 2 weeks had that happened, but I usually don't stick on to games that long. So I think that sort of was par for the course. I liked it. I enjoyed my time with it. I could see myself when I get like a few, you know, some quiet moments throughout the year, jumping back into like Halo multiplayer or like Forza and those like just sort of easy games to like fall into for like an afternoon of gaming. I can see myself going back to, because I did have so much fun with it. And like, I found it giving me that like core Halo experience where you get dropped in a map, like, you know, a couple shots to the
body.
We
played it once or twice together too, I think, right?
Yeah, we played that one night with Douglas, and I'm sure we'll play again, but I just haven't been playing games that much. And then when the campaign finally launched, was super excited. Well, leading up to like the campaign, me and my buddy Dom and my other buddy Konov had played Reach 1, 2, 3 and like half of 4, and we never got all the way through 4, but we had played them all as co-op, not all three of us, all of them, because some of them are only 2-player co-ops, but the ones where we could do 3, we had done 3 people, and we'd played them all together. So we had planned to do this one like that. The fact that it didn't launch with co-op also kind of like soured my experience, because
I agree.
I had spent the last like 2 years just sort of like going through the Halo games with my friends, getting ready, like just recapping the story and just having something to play. The fact that this didn't like allow us to continue that like we had planned was a little annoying, even though we still all started at the same time, like played over Discord, it was fine. But yeah, like I got through the first missions, it was good, it was getting real like Halo-y, and then I got like dropped into the open world, and it was just like, you know, go find this armor, do this. And I like did those things. So I was like, okay, that's new for Halo. That's kind of cool. But I was just getting like really big, like Far Cry 6 vibes. And I like you said, I probably should have just like sort of beelined the story. Like I talk a lot about how I played Red Dead that way. Like I didn't do the side missions, and I just tried to keep my own like dime. I tried to keep the pacing of the story up, and I probably should have done that for Halo as well. But yeah, I just like kind of fell off it there and got busy. So my gaming time kind of ran out, and I just haven't really went back. I'd like to go back and try to finish it, just because I like Halo so much, being like an Xbox kid. But at this point, I might just wait till the
the co-op arrives and try to play with my buds.
That's what I'm doing. Cause I beat it on like a pre-release build for writing about it for work. And that save file didn't carry over to the retail version. So I'm just going to wait for co-op to come out. Amusingly, like one of our number one stories in December was one of our freelancers, Steve Vicvari, wrote a post about co-op.
Bootlegging the co-op into it. No, it wasn't about coming. It was about like how
how to access it through a glitch.
Yeah.
Which was surprising because
it proves that people want co-op. Like people like to play Halo. People like to play games with their friends. People have friends and they like their friends.
That's something I'm looking forward to as well.
I played through pretty much every Halo with friends, even like the original one. Like the first time I went through it, I played most of it. No, I played the whole thing with my brother. Like that's how I did it, local co-op. And then I think ever since then, I've done it online, either with my brother, with my friends or something like that. So it was very strange to play through it for the first time solo. I feel you on the Far Cry 6 vibes. I don't think it's quite as overwhelming where there's like a million things to do and you don't know what to do next.
And it's not necessarily bad. It just like rubbed me the wrong way. And
no,
it's like
I get
a very much me thing. I don't think it's bad. I think a lot of people get a lot of enjoyment out of it. I was like,
I think the key is like not trying to do it all. Like only do the main things that look interesting and always progressing to the next level, and that improves the pacing. But that's definitely 100% valid criticism. And once you do most of the open world things, the world starts to feel pretty barren. It's almost like 343 Industries had plans for way more to be included in that world, and I think that was likely the case, and we're gonna see more and there'll be more DLC and stuff like that. But for me, like, Halo's always been about the multiplayer. I've logged something crazy that's at this point that's like 4 days or something like that.
Wait, before we
in December.
Yeah, that is crazy. Before we get too much into that, can I like ask a question that sort of bridges the campaign and multiplayer and your take on it?
Yeah.
Someone who's played more. So you can find armor in the campaign, right? That armor that like carries over to multiplayer. Like you find like hidden armor stashes. How do you feel about that? So like the multiplayer, one of the criticisms, not so rightly so, because the multiplayer is free. Anyone can play it, but it's very much like battle pass based. So you need to like pay to unlock armor and thing like that. You don't have to pay, but you kind of have to pay, right? Am I getting that right?
To get the battle. So if you play single player, there's like certain things you can unlock in multiplayer, which I like because it gives people that maybe wouldn't delve into single player like a reason to unlock stuff. Because there's a lot of people out there, like I have a friend, he literally stopped playing the game because he unlocked all of the armor. Like that's the only reason that he plays it, is to unlock cosmetics.
And so it's just kind of a cool one way. Something to do, because you know in Far Cry you're looking for collectibles, but they do nothing for you. At least in Halo,
gives you
that
like
carries
cool,
over to to your multiplayer, and I thought that was kind of a smart little tie-in.
And then the battle pass you need to have purchased to unlock, and you can buy it at any point. It's the same as like Apex. You can even buy like an earlier season's battle pass when a new season launches. We're still on season one 6 months long. But yeah, that's how you're not going to unlock stuff unless you buy the battle pass. Like that's the free-to-play aspect of it, which I'm fine with doing. Like I've logged so much time into the game, I'm totally fine with it. I think there's a lot of valid criticism of the battle pass where some of the armor cosmetics aren't quite as interesting as maybe they should be.
Did you buy the cat ears?
I did buy the cat ears. I paid $11.29 real human dollars for the cat ears. That was not something you could unlock. That's another criticism of the game, is like not everything that's released in terms of cosmetics can be actually unlocked through the battle pass. They're like additional purchases. Which again, like I think that's a valid criticism, but also it's a free to play game, and this is how the industry is structured now.
No, it is.
You can cry about it and you can complain about it, but that's not going to change because people like me are still buying the cosmetics. Like I'm fine with like if every 3 months some kind of like wacky cosmetic comes out and I have to pay $10 for it. Like I'm okay with that. Like it's not the end of the world to me.
Yeah. On that note, first with the campaign thing, I haven't played the Halo campaign, but I've played other games where there have been unlockables or, you know, things that you get from playing the campaign that benefit you in multiplayer. I don't remember which Battlefield game did it, but I know there was an older Battlefield game that I played where you could unlock certain guns in the campaign that you could then use in multiplayer. And generally that stuff is fine. The only issue I would say with it is, you know, if it was something that impacted gameplay and it was then locked behind the campaign, that was a separate cost from the multiplayer, that I would then say, okay, there's a problem there, because you're basically forcing people to pay for the campaign to unlock this item that's going to impact their gameplay.
This is all cosmetics.
For purely cosmetics, it's not a problem. And then in terms of, like, you know, the battle pass and free to play and all that, I haven't had an issue with cosmetics in free to play games at all. And I understand why people do have issues with it, but for me, it's like, it's not gameplay related at all. It's, you know, I can play the game and get the same experience whether I pay for the battle pass or not. And as long as that's, like, you know, something that's consistent with the Halo Infinite series and other free to play battle pass games, then, you know, I don't think I'll ever have a problem with that model. Where I see issues with it is when you start, you know, gating stuff that's gameplay based behind monetary transactions. And that's a little bit scummier, in my opinion, especially you know, just as an example, let's say 343 puts out a DLC update to the multiplayer with new guns, and you have to pay to get that, and then the guns are broken and overpowered. And so everybody who has bought the DLC has an advantage over people who have not, because the guns are, like, overpowered. That would be a significant problem in my view. But, you know, as long as it's just cosmetic stuff that doesn't have any benefit or unbalance the gameplay, like, I really don't see a problem with it.
That's totally the way I look at it. And I also think that, like, Halo's it's doing quite well now, and it's very popular in, like, the esports scene, which I've been following, shocking myself even. I've been following far more than I ever expected I would. It's coming back in, like, a big way, and I think a big part of that is the fact that it's free to play, right? Anyone can pick it up and give it a try. It's also, like, a game that it spans generations. Like, I'm a little bit older than you guys, and, like, we all have some sort of a relationship to the franchise. But I think it also needs to bring it. Yeah, it needs to bring it, same as Pokemon. Yeah, but it needs to bring it in a new audience, right? And the way you do that now is adopting at least some of the trends of the modern video game industry, which is free to play. Cat ears, which I purchased, super proud of my cat ears.
Everybody has,
and focusing on cosmetics. Like, if you're an old guy, you're, like, in your mid 30s, you played Halo growing up, and you want to dive back into it, like, no one's making you buy the cat ears. No one's making you get the battle pass. No one's making you, like, play for all of these cosmetics. Like, you can just boot the game up on your PC or your Xbox One or Series X or S, and you can play it. And you can play with people on PC.
Which is nice.
And you can play it entirely for free. Like, that's something that I think a lot of people, like, everyone's focusing on, like, the missing features, and I get it. I get that it sucks that games launch in this state sometimes where they don't have like certain things that everybody wants, like co-op, or, like, a lot of people are complaining about the number of maps in the game and that sort of thing. But I guess for me, I'm just happy that we have a Halo that gameplay wise is an excellent mix of, like, old school, slower paced Halo, newer Halo with the movement, that is fun. Like, it's actually a fun game that I want to play, and I haven't felt like that about a Halo game since probably Halo 3. And I know a lot of people that grew up with a franchise similar in age to me that feel pretty much the exact same way, where, like, there's something a little off about Reach and Halo 5.
There's nothing off about Reach. Stop saying that.
Reach didn't work for me. It was too much like Call of Duty with the loadouts and stuff. I know that we have differing opinions on it.
Yeah, no, you're right. Loadouts were weird.
Couldn't handle the loadouts. Beautiful. That was not Halo. That was Call of Duty to me.
Yeah, but without Reach, we never had the DMR.
It's true. Well, the DMR wasn't even really.
As someone
in.
Who
yeah, that's
only
true.
Played Reach, even the loadouts were weird to me. Like, I had played other Halo games just with friends, but I never owned any of them. Reach was the first Halo game I ever bought, owned, and played.
Campaign was great.
A lot. And I thought the loadouts were super strange and weird. I hated them.
Yeah, Halo was a weapon control game, and, like, loadouts didn't make sense. And I think there's also, like, that game, because I've been watching, like, so many YouTube videos about the history of Halo esports and all that fun stuff. That game basically killed, like, the professional scene of Halo multiplayer because of the loadout situation. It just, like, squashed it entirely, and it went away for a while. But yeah.
Fair enough. I'm trying to play The Last of Us over the break. Well, the break's over now. And I realized I think that was the wrong game to play because it's sad and scary. And I should have picked up Uncharted 4 instead. But
yeah, I told you that.
I've been wanting to play it for so long, and Alex wanted to play it too. So I was like, this is the time. So it was like on sale for like $25. We got it. We got a PS4 for my buddy. Scary.
It's one of my fondest gaming memories is playing that game prior to release for review for work. And just like didn't know anything. Well, I knew the preview stuff, but like nothing had leaked yet, really. There's like a little bit of leaks related to some story beats, and spending like 2 hours to 3 hours a night playing it for, because it's long. It's like 35 hours or something like that. Like a week and a bit, maybe even more than that. And I remember just like playing it, and I'd go downstairs and like talk to my partner about it after, and it was always just like emotionally exhausting. Like I've never played a game like that where, and part of it's because the first Last of Us is my favorite video game of all time. I really like all the characters and care about the story and the outcomes of their lives within that story, so the stakes were like a little bit higher for me, and I just know that like every day I was like absolutely exhausted after playing it, just like emotionally drained, because
it's that game so viciously violent too. Like you just see like things you're like like truly shock you, and you're like, wow, they put that in there. Like that was really brutal. That was like tough.
Like whether or not you like how that game played out, whether or not you like the opening where one of the main characters, something happens to them.
I've been enjoying it so far. Or past that part.
Or the like ending, like it's one of the only games, not even games, like pieces of media that like truly surprised me. Like I didn't think that it was going to go in that direction. I didn't think that that was going to happen. I didn't, like there's a lot that I just didn't expect in that game, and as someone who consumes a lot of media, whether it's TV shows, movies, games, like I usually know what's going to happen, right? Because so much stuff, and that surprised me at every single turn. And I have a lot of respect for that the team behind the game at Naughty Dog for taking like crazy risks with that title.
Yeah, that's fair. It's good. Alex and I are still probably gonna try and finish it, but I'm making
it's a lot.
Promises. Yeah, it's at this point, we would probably put like 15 hours into it, and knowing we've got like another 15 is tough.
Cool. Yeah, I don't think there's anything else really to say about Halo Infinite. Great game, free to play. It's on Game Pass. Give it a shot. Totally understand if you're not into the open world, but what I would suggest is just powering through the core missions. You're still going to feel a little bit of strange pacing, but there's a good game in there with a cool plot. The weapon is a great character. This is probably the most back to basics we've ever seen the Master Chief, where a lot of the story isn't told really through him speaking. It's told through like his actions and his lack of expression, if you will, and his very few voice lines. It's really like what he's not saying rather than what he is saying, I guess, is what I'm getting at. Give it a shot. Game Pass is a great service, and Halo Infinite is free on it. Do we want to talk about the games we've been playing? Like, I pretty much just did that.
I did too. Yeah, just give me a little.
I can do a little.
You got anything?
Little spiel.
Go for it. Go for it.
Is it Destiny?
It's Destiny, but also there's another
hit
game.
Us. Hit us.
Go for it. Hit us.
So basically, I've just been playing Destiny 2, and I've returned to Stardew Valley for the first time.
Oh, nice. I have as well. I played like 2 days on my iPad. I was like, I'm gonna do a mobile one, and I haven't played like since those first 2 days since I started that one up, but I want to get back into it.
Yeah.
Has anything been out? Like, has there been DLC? Or I haven't played in like a year. It used to be the game that I would play at Christmas time on like the Switch or Switch Lite or whatever. Like that would be the game that I played for the time off over Christmas, but I didn't do that this year.
Yeah, they've added some stuff. There's a new, well, I think it's new. It's new since the last time that I played Stardew, which was a long time ago. But there's this like beach map for your farm.
Oh,
it's kind of like the river map, but it's like more
that's
sand.
Cool.
I believe it came out like around Animal Crossing with the island sort of aesthetic.
Yeah,
or
yeah, it did. Yeah. Yep.
Kind of has a similar vibe to that. So that one's neat. I'm doing a farm on the beach map with some buddies and just keeping it chill, having some fun.
Nice.
Yeah, that's fun.
I think there was some other new stuff that was added, but I'm not totally sure what it is, and I haven't gotten far enough in my farm yet to find out.
Do you guys know what the guy behind Stardew Valley's next game is? I don't know what his real name is, but his Twitter handle is Concerned Ape.
Yeah, I forget what his real name too, but the next game is called Haunted Chocolatier. And
it's about a chocolate factory.
Yeah, so I'm thinking it's going to be like maybe a little closer to like Graveyard Keeper or what was that, like Shopkeeper type one?
Have you played Graveyard Keeper? I've always thought about trying it.
No, I haven't. And there's another one. It's like an indie game where you like run a little shop and you do like a lot of dungeon crawling underneath.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. You're like running an RPG shop and like adventurers come in. Oh, I have it. I used to play it a bit.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Haunted Chocolatier takes some elements from them, because I know in the announcement post, I believe he talked about it having more like RPG mechanic elements and like more fighting and like more areas to explore. Moonlighter, yeah, that's the one. So, and I hope it does, but then again, I still love like the core, just like charming, small quaintness of Stardew Valley. So I hope it doesn't go too far. But that game being announced like a few months ago, or maybe even like 8 months ago at this point, who knows, was like been in my head over and over again. And kind of the reason I keep picking up Stardew is because I'm just like wanting that magic. And I know it's going to be like 2 years until we see that game, if not more.
Yeah, it's going to be a long time. I guess the only gaming thing that I wanted to mention was I bought Far Cry 6. I always say I'm going to buy games and then I never do it. Far Cry 6 was on sale over the holidays. I bought it. I have full intentions of actually playing it. Bennett's coverage of the game really convinced me that I should give it a shot, as someone who at one point wrote a really long story for another publication that I worked at the time about like how Far Cry 3 was one of the best games I'd ever played. I'm looking forward to jumping back into it once I'm able to kick the Halo Infinite habit. But I did finally buy a game that I said I was going to buy.
It's not in Game Pass? Isn't like Ubisoft games part of Game Pass too? Isn't like every game in Game
Pass? I think they're coming. No. It's not yet.
And it's not going to be like it's not going to be every game either, I think. Oh. I don't know. I don't know. I bought it before that announcement was made, so don't make me regret my purchase.
Sorry. You got it on sale, at least, I hope.
I think it was 40, sadly, yeah, like $49 there was, lots of Christmas was on sale.
Yeah. I'll probably play Far Cry 6 at some point, but I'm going to wait and pick it up when it's like 20 bucks or when it shows up on Game Pass, whichever happens first. That's what I did with Far Cry 5. I like waited and then I basically got it for free because it was on sale for like $10 with all the DLC on Epic Game Store. And then I had like a $10 coupon.
So, oh yeah, those come around.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to play it as well. I really enjoyed it with my like initial hands-on, and I'm a big fan of the Far Cry series. But with like the amount that I game nowadays, I don't know if I'll get to it, to be honest. With like Halo being the next like campaign after I get through The Last of Us that I probably need to get through, and then possibly starting a Stardew Valley farm on the side, you know. This gaming shit, it's hard. It's not easy.
Yeah.
There's not enough time. It is not enough time. Yeah. Too many games, too many problems. Okay, I think that's probably a good place to wrap it up. That's it. Thanks for listening to the Syrupcast. You can find me
Happy
on
New Year, everybody, as well.
Oh yeah, sorry. That is a thing that we should
squeeze that in there. Yeah, just we're happy to be back. We're happy you guys have been listening, and hopefully we got a couple of cool podcasts and a lot of cool content coming through in the year. I felt like we should say that for the first one of 2022.
Yeah, we're gonna keep it pretty consistent. You won't see John all the time. You'll see Bennett and I all the time, but we're going to try to get other members of the Mobile Serb team on the podcast more. I always say this and then never push it through and make it happen, but that's one of my 2022 things, among many other things that I want to build at the site. That's something that we're definitely going to make happen.
There are a couple of people hired in 2021 that I think have yet to be on the podcast ever, so if we can get Karan's them on,
never
like
been on it.
Karan or Nida one or two times, that could be fun too.
Be great. For sure. So you can follow me on Twitter at @Patrick_Rourke, and of course on mobileserbs.com. I haven't done a ton of writing lately. There's a story up about my journey with the Series 2 Elite controller for the Xbox and how much I love and hate it simultaneously, and how I keep buying new ones and trading and returning the current one that I have because buttons are broken. The one I have right now, it's right here, right beside me. The Y button only works about 75% of the time. It's brand new. Just picked it up yesterday after work. Quality control issues. Really hoping Microsoft fixes this at some point. Love the controller. But yeah.
It's tough because I've never had an original, like, regular controller that's had as many issues as you have with Elites.
It's a mess. And it's not just me. It's like very widespread. If you, there's like a cottage industry of like people replacing parts in the Elite. There's like there's YouTube channels that are like dedicated to like ways to fix the Elite controller. And like, I did it all with the first one I had. And then finally one day I was like, I've paid too much for this. I can't continue just like popping this open and fixing things. Like, I'm just going to buy a new one. The first one I got was a review unit. Hopefully they fixed the issues by now. Y button was broken, returned it yesterday, got a new one. Y button also still doesn't really work the way it's designed to. It fails maybe 25% of the time or so. But yeah, Bennett, where can people find you? And do you have any recent stories that hit the site that you want to highlight?
Sorry, excuse me. You can find me just about anywhere at the Brad Fad. You can find me on mobilesyrup.com and the Mobile Syrup YouTube channel. So I believe by the time this goes live, I should have a video out about an EV road trip where I took a Porsche Taycan, if not live, going to be live the day after. But the Porsche Taycan EV, I took it on like a 1,000-kilometer road trip to visit my parents and took it to sort of northern Ontario, a little bit off the 401, getting into those more rural zones. So I think that's an interesting video for anyone that's considering an EV or just wants to see what it's like to drive around Canada, not in Toronto in one. And then I've also got on the site that water bottle one that I talked about kind of for fun. And I did a little hands-on with the Lululemon mirror, which might be the worst product of 2022.
There's no way it's the worst product of 2022.
Well, it's
like, too early in the year for that.
Yeah. I guess. I don't know, dude. Like, $2,600 for a smart mirror is like that right off the hop doesn't put it in a good spot.
You seen how much their pants cost?
I know, but at least you're getting pants.
Because I own several pairs. it's awful.
Anyway, but yeah, I've got lots of stuff up on the site. You can check it out. Lots of like little mini reviews and features, but hopefully you're going to get back up on the news roll again this week and lots more stuff and lots more videos as well.
And John, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at John_Lamont. That's JON_LAMONT. Always spell it out because I don't have an H in my name and most every Johns week, do. So people I'm get like, confused.
Yeah, I should also spell it out.
But yeah, that's where you can find me. As far as stories go, I wrote about Google's not so smart displays, struggling to set timers for some reason. Thankfully a fix is on the way. Mine just doesn't work. I'll tell it to set a timer and it'll be like, hey, I don't know how to do that. And I'm like, you do. I know that you do.
This is the Nest?
Yeah, the Nest Hubs.
Huh.
It's been a really weird issue.
That is weird. Have you written about this yet?
I did, yeah.
Interesting. Okay, I have an idea. We'll talk about it later.
I also wrote about Samsung's Galaxy S21 FE pricing at various Canadian carriers. So if you're interested in that, check out that story and see where it makes sense to get one, if it makes sense to get one. And on the weekend I reviewed these earbuds. If you're watching the video cast, then you saw me hold them up. They're like $40. They're cheap. They're okay. If you're looking for a cheap pair of Bluetooth wireless called? Earbuds, they are called the Black Shark Lucifer T1s.
By Xiaomi though, not Razer.
Yeah. They're not owned by Razer. It's a Xiaomi company. I thought they were all right for the price. They're not the best earbuds I've ever used, but if you're looking for some cheap earbuds that work all right and have okay sound, they're not bad. And yeah, that's
basically it for me. $40. $40 is pretty good rock bottom price. Yeah, I think in terms of what I've tested, I think like $69 is the cheapest at like OnePlus Buds Z. So pretty good price.
Nice. So yeah, that's it. And as always, you can find all of our content on mobilesyrup.com and also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at mobilesyrup.
Oh, thanks, and on TikTok. Listening.
Oh yeah, TikTok. We have a TikTok now. There's content there. Check it out. Subscribe.
A little bit. Started it.
Yes. We're hoping to do more in the new year. But it's we growing. Got some good stuff on there.
You want to get in early, get on the ground floor.
The ground floor. The TikTok ground floor.
Only a few years too late. Anyway.
Bye. See ya.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned, We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.